This episode of Stage 9 is brought to you by Audible.com, offering more than 180,000 titles for smartphone, tablet, and desktop. To get a free audiobook of your choice and help Trek FM at the same time, visit audibletrial.com/trekfm. And also by Enterprise in Space, an international program of the nonprofit National Space Society. Find out how you can help science and education and become a virtual crew member aboard the NSS Enterprise Orbiter by visiting enterpriseinspace.org. And if you want to join the conversation and share your thoughts on this episode, join the Babel Conference, our listeners group on Facebook. Just type B-A-B-E-L into the Facebook search field. We look forward to seeing you there.
Hey everyone, I'm Rod Roddenberry, and you're listening to Trek FM.
Hello and welcome to Stage 9, Trek FM show about the people who make Star Trek. I'm Mike, and today I am joined by a very special guest, Lee from Earl Grey. How's it going, Lee?
Yeah, I'm not too bad. Yourself, Mike?
I'm doing pretty well. Thank you very much for joining me. Today we're going to be discussing a brand new movie by the co-creator of Star Trek Discovery, Alex Kurtzman, and that movie is The Mummy. So, okay, The Mummy. This is a feature film directed by Alex Kurtzman, although he didn't really write it himself. He co-wrote the story, but it was written by a couple of other Mission Impossible alums, a lot of Mission Impossible people on this. It was co-written by David Koepp and Christopher McQuarrie. And yeah, it stars Tom Cruise, also from Mission Impossible, and Sophia Boutella from Star Trek Beyond as the title character, the mummy. And yeah, it's about a guy who finds a mummy and hijinks ensue. No, it's less, this, it's a remake of the Universal, the classic Universal horror movie. And the idea behind this is to launch what they're calling the Dark Universe, which is going to be Universal's monster cinematic universe, which is kind of interesting in that that was kind of the first shared universe ever in movies, going all the way back to the 30s, I guess, with the original Mummy and Frankenstein and Dracula and Creature from the Black Lagoon and all that stuff. So, yeah, a lot of people have a lot of opinions about this movie, which I find rather interesting. But I'm curious, Lee, what's your opinion of The Mummy?
I wasn't particularly excited for this movie. I think the trailer has been quite frequent at the cinema for a wee while now. And every time I saw the trailer, I thought, God, it just looks really boring. It looks very, like, the cinematography seems really grey. And I'm like, it doesn't seem overly fun or exciting. And I was kind of confused because when I see Tom Cruise in a trailer or a movie, I always think, that's like a sign of quality. That is like a stamp of approval if I ever see anyone. And then I was watching it thinking, like, kind of not seeing why Tom Cruise is associating himself with this movie. But I like that it's got Sophia, her last name escapes me, from Star Trek Beyond. Yeah, it's got Tom Cruise. These are things that make me want to check it out at least. So I finally saw it yesterday, and I liked it straight away when it had the Universal logo, and then it had a little twist, and there it was, like the Dark Universe logo. I thought, yeah, wow, that's really cool. And then it was kind of downhill from there, like when the highlight of the movie is the indent, it's a bad sign. I think there's a good film in there at the beginning of the movie when they're talking about, we're kind of explorers that we go out to these kind of war zones like Iraq, where ISIS is destroying all these historical monuments, and they're stealing them or taking them back and selling them on the market for money. And then ISIS are going to be destroying these areas anyway, so it covers up the crime. And I'm thinking, that sounds like a really exciting movie. I want to pay to see that movie. And then that's like the small part of it. And it was just kind of disappointment and frustration and frankly boredom from that moment onwards.
Yeah, I don't know. I guess I was definitely looking forward to this movie more than you and more than most people, I guess. You know, part of it was just because I was curious to see Alex Kurtzman's talents as a director. I mean, we did cover People Like Us here on Stage 9, and that was interesting. But this is obviously a whole new ballgame because it's a massive, you know, summer tentpole action blockbuster, whereas that one was just, you know, sort of like a nice little character piece. But Kurtzman is kind of known for doing the you know, role writing the big action blockbusters. So to see him, you know, sort of like take the lead on one, I think was cool. And, you know, like you're saying, Tom Cruise being sort of like the stamp of quality, I think is very true in a lot of ways. And, you know, there's also that sort of Mission Impossible thing, like a lot of people have sort of been making fun of it, you know, from the first trailer is, you know, looking like a Mission Impossible movie with the mummy, Mummy Impossible, you know, or whatever. And I do see that, but at the same time, when I see that, I think, oh, that sounds amazing, you know, like that's what I want to see. I mean, I don't know. We'll get into to that in a minute, but I was, needless to say, I was looking forward to it, especially when you talk about, like, you know, David Capp and Christopher McQuarrie, you know, writing it. I mean, you know, Capp is the guy who wrote The Lost World, Jurassic Park, and various other movies. And, you know, McQuarrie has won an Oscar for The Usual Suspects, not to mention, you know, various other, you know, high-profile movies like the last Mission Impossible film and stuff like that. And then, you know, some other people behind the scenes, you've got like Paul Hirsch editing it, you know, he edited freaking, you know, Empire Strikes Back, right? I mean, it's like a top tier talent, you know, behind the scenes and in front of the camera. And it looked like an interesting premise, and you know, especially with the, you know, start of a new cinematic universe, I thought that was a really cool idea. So I was like way, way excited going into it, and it had me at first. Like you're saying, the premise, you know, I thought was really solid. But I think at some point it just sort of like devolved into, I don't know, just kind of like your standard action movie, you know, with a few, you know, jump scares and stuff like that, you know, for the horror crowd. And it didn't really work for me. I thought more than anything, it was just kind of boring. But I definitely did not hate it as much as most people seem to hate it, which is interesting.
Yeah, like I think kind of my feeling on it was that, yeah, I kind of went in not expecting much. But what I kind of, my biggest surprise with it was that I was watching these trailers thinking, oh, they're holding really back with a lot of the action that we've all seen the scene or heard all about this moment where like they're in zero gravity on board the plane as it plummets. And I'm getting little flashbacks to Rogue Nation as I'm watching that. And I'm thinking, oh, that's maybe the shape of things to come. But I think the film feels really, really cheap. And it kind of is in the grand scheme of things that it has a budget of $120 million. And I'm not sure how much money like Tom Cruise and Russell Crowe kind of would have taken up of that. Like, I could almost imagine that's more than half their budget to kind of pay for them. So I imagine they've got some sort of deal on the other end of it all. But there just didn't seem to be much kind of on the screen. Like, there's very few action set pieces. We've got this kind of action scene in the desert in the beginning. And then we've got the scene where kind of they're being chased in London, and then there's very little else to go on kind of. And any action scenes that do happen, like the idea of these kind of the knights that are brought back, like when you get some action pieces like that kind of in the underground, it's so badly lit. At one point I was thinking, like, have they left the 3D filter on here? It was really hard to see the action that was going on. So you're kind of cut off from seeing it and properly like enjoying it. And I found that a real barrier to overcome.
Yeah, I guess I didn't really have that much problem with the photography. I thought that it looked pretty good. I went to see it in 3D. I saw it in IMAX 3D, and the light level was pretty solid, all things considered. And I thought that the look of the movie was pretty cool. And I was hesitant about the 3D. I was like, do I see it in 3D or not? You know, because they shot it on 35 millimeter and stuff like that. But I saw like an interview with Kurtzman where he was talking about the 3D, and you know, it was definitely done for promotional purposes, but I think that the 3D was fairly solid in this. You know, it wasn't very crazy. You know, it was very subdued most of the time, but there weren't any, like, you know, sometimes you see, you know, some shots and you're like, whoa, they needed to take another pass on that one. That you definitely see the seams there. And there weren't really any moments like that in this movie. So, yeah, I thought that the 3D was decent. And yeah, the look of the movie I thought was decent, too. As far as, like, the action, like you're talking about with the zero-G plane and stuff like that, like, that sequence I thought was amazing, you know? I mean, I was totally into that, and I guess I was hoping for more of that, you know, further down the line, but I think it really had this weird challenge where it was trying to balance, like, a big-budget action movie with a, you know, little horror film as well. And it felt like it needed to be an action movie, but it wanted to be a horror film, and it didn't quite nail either of those things. And I think the action is better than the horror, for sure. But at the same time, like, some of the stuff that they set up with, like, you know, Russell Crowe's character and stuff like that, I'm more excited for the horror stuff in future installments of this franchise than I am in the action stuff. So what did you think about that? You know, the idea of, like, Russell Crowe being, you know, Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde, and this sort of being like an entry into another world.
Yeah, the Cockney Nick Fury. I thought Russell Crowe was quite good. I think he's long gone from being this trim action hero that he was. I quite enjoyed, that was probably the highlight of the movie for me, was kind of Russell Crowe. I thought he seemed to nail the tone of the movie they were kind of going for, whereas Tom Cruise, where I felt he was coming across more goofy, and that's not something I kind of associate with him. He just seemed to be sort of a bumbling character, and I never really kind of got a feel for his character, that he's meant to be this lovable rogue, but he never felt much of a rogue, and he never felt like he had much of an arc. It all felt like people were saying, oh, you're this kind of guy, but it never sort of showed on screen. Whereas Russell Crowe seemed to kind of nail the tone of that character, like, he really embraced that. And I didn't think it was brilliantly kind of chosen, this idea that when he kind of turns into Dr. Jekyll, that he's like, what, governor? And, you know, it's more laughable than kind of serious, or thinking, wow, this guy's like intimidating. He's just like, he just seems like a kind of like football casual from like Millwall or something, just chucking Tom Cruise around. Like, it doesn't feel like sort of a gods and monsters idea. But like, I would just give kind of Russell Crowe a pass, because at least he embraces the tone, and he seems to kind of nail something down. He's consistent, and I can buy into him as this kind of mad, wacky doctor. And when he is Dr. Jekyll, it's enjoyable. I kind of got a kick from it, whether that was on purpose or not.
I think it was on purpose. You know, I think that this movie, you know, sets out to have a good time, and, you know, in some instances it does succeed. You know, I mean, they've talked a lot about, like, their plans for future movies, you know, the next one being, you know, in the planning stages right now is Bride of Frankenstein. Which is interesting that they'd skip over Frankenstein and go right to Bride of Frankenstein, but that one's being written by David Koepp as well, and it's going to be directed by Bill Condon, who did, he did Beauty and the Beast most recently, and Dream
You can admit
Girls.
You're a Twilight fan, it's not a problem. You can admit you know him from that.
Those are the only two Twilight movies I haven't seen, believe it or not. And he also directed Gods and Monsters, which is very, very fitting. Yeah. You know, I mean, he kind of got his start like writing like, you know, B-grade horror movies. Like, I think he did like Candyman or something like that. Mm-hmm. And, you know, here he is now after making a, you know, James Whale biopic, getting to direct, you know, James Whale's masterpiece, you know, as many would consider it to be. And, you know, just hearing Kurtzman talk about that and saying, like, oh, Cap's script is amazing. He's doing something really weird and cool with it. I mean, what do you think? Like, even not liking this movie, are you excited to see what they're planning to do with the franchise?
I'm not too sure. Like, one thing I did find kind of baffling is that it's obviously PG-13 in America. It's our equivalent of a rated R here in the UK. Like, I remember just kind of like, I was kind of getting into my seat, and then the certificate came up on the screen. It was like, this film was rated 15, and it was like, what? So like, I found that quite jarring, because I was like, oh wow, there's maybe going to be some like nudity, hardcore violence. It never felt more than kind of a PG-13, so I'm a bit baffled by that. So that might explain kind of a bit of a lackluster response here in the UK in the box office compared to, say, Wonder Woman, where, you know, you can go along with the family. Like, the Mummy's already kind of cutting out people that might be coming to see this sort of movie and could kind of float the franchise. I mean, personally, I'm not overly excited about it. This series, like, that doesn't say I'm not going to go see the movies when they come out. It's just something that I'm like, oh, of course they're going to do kind of like a franchise of it. But I don't find the choices of acting talent that they've kind of gone for in terms of the leads too exciting. Like, in terms of, like, I don't really want to see Johnny Depp as the Invisible Man. Like, that doesn't particularly excite me. Javier Bardem's been cast to see it, if I remember correctly. Yeah. That's interesting enough, but seems somewhat predictable. Like, you know, with like the Marvel movies, and to a kind of lesser extent the DC movies, like, when you have these main leads, a lot of them are relatively unknowns to an extent. So there's kind of an interest and an excitement in that, and you can kind of impose the characters on them. Whereas with the Invisible Man and Wolfman, I'm thinking, oh, I'm familiar with these people to a large extent. And I think that was a problem with, say, Tom Cruise. I'm just looking at him going, wait, why is Tom Cruise in this? And I just almost can't get over watching the movie and thinking, right, there must be a reason Tom Cruise is in this movie. Is he being paid a lot? What's made him pick to do this? And I think they need to start, I maybe need to get over that to an extent. But like, there's nothing that I've heard so far that's got me like excited to check them out or rushing to the cinema to see them. But like, Bride of Frankenstein is an interesting story and property, so depending on who they cast, I'm more than willing to give it a go. But as it stands at the moment, I think this could be the first and last entry in the Dark Universe series.
You know, I don't think that that's going to happen, because, I mean, I guess, you know, you're saying that it didn't do too well in the UK, and I know it didn't do too well here in the US, but from what I've read, the international box office has been pretty...
Yeah, it's made its numbers back there already.
Yeah, so, you know, I mean, it's going to be, I think, one of those things where, you know, I mean, one of those franchises where here in the States, for example, we're like, why are we getting another one of these movies? But it's because everyone else in the world is watching it, you know, except for the U.S. So, you know, I think that that's, I'm going to say, a good thing. Like, I'm happy that it is successful, even though it's not tremendously good, because I do like a lot of the things that I'm hearing about this, their plans for, you know, the other films. You know, I like the idea of Bride of Frankenstein being like a big blockbuster in a sense, you know, and them skipping over the first, you know, installment and going straight to Bride, I think is really interesting. I like the talent involved. I think that, you know, in a lot of ways, Condon is like the perfect choice for that movie. But also, one of the things which I've heard, which I find to be very interesting, is the idea that they're not going to be all mega blockbusters. They're going to vary in terms of scale and budget and stuff like that, and because of that, you know, we might get like some sort of like hardcore R-rated horror movie, you know, which is done on a very small scale, and it will still be in the same universe as, you know, this big action blockbuster, The Mummy. You know what I mean?
Like, one thing I just found it kind of, yeah, it definitely feels like, in terms of, like, I'd be curious to see what they do with sort of the budget. As I say, this one was, like, 120 million, which, yeah, it's a lot of money. But in terms of, like, a big tentpole kind of launch movie, like, it was just things, like, I just would, like, be very curious to see perhaps how they manage that better in future. That, with things, for example, when we see kind of the story of this, the mummy, and how she ended up being incarcerated, and it seemed that they only had like 3 minutes of footage, and like they just stretched that out over the whole movie and constantly going back to that. Like, yeah. I'd like to see people kind of like, I'm, you know, maybe this is where Kurtzman's lack of experience has come in handy, where someone can make a $120 million mummy movie and make it feel epic in scale and scope. And I just don't think he ever kind of got above that. Like, if I watched that on like the Sci-Fi Channel or TNT, like I would think, oh yeah, that's fine enough. But it never seems to kind of go beyond that sort of scale. It feels it like I don't see that budget translating onto the screen, apart from perhaps the zero G flight. And I think that there's never anything where you think, oh wow, that's like real sense of scale, there's a real sense of scope there, or like that you think, oh, this has been really creative with perhaps camera angles to really, you know, do more with less. I just don't think he perhaps has that talent to, you know, really make the most of that kind of budget. And that's perhaps where they're going to maybe excel more in Bride of Frankenstein, with a director that has kind of got that experience, where I think Kurtzman is seriously lacking in it.
Yeah, you know, I mean, there's been a lot of talk in recent weeks about, you know, the hiring of directors who do not have a lot of experience for these, you know, mega blockbusters, and, you know, what's fair and what's not or whatever. And Kurtzman is sort of like an interesting case in that, you know, he has directed one thing before, and it was a very small scale project. But at the same time, he has, in a lot of ways, been responsible for some of the biggest blockbusters in recent years, you know, probably most notably in that regard, the first two Transformers movies, but also, you know, Star Trek, Mission Impossible, you know, I mean, all of these things. And it's kind of a unique case where it's like, well, you would think that, you know, as someone who has been responsible for basically creating the blueprint for a lot of these franchises, he would have sort of like a clear idea of what it takes to make one which is successful. But at the same time, and I mean, who knows, maybe he wrote the original script and then, you know, people came in and polished it or whatever. But like, just looking at the credits, it's like you would think that he would be at the very least writing this thing, you know, I mean, as well as directing. That's a very strange, you know, choice that they made in that regard. And I don't know. I mean, I don't think his direction was bad, but at the same time, it didn't stand out, aside from that plane sequence, which was pretty amazing. So I'm not sure. It'll be interesting to see if he's directing anything in the future. But, you know, for a while there was some rumors going around, and it certainly seems like there may have been a plan for him to direct the pilot for Discovery, which he's co-creating, and that ended up not happening, probably because of The Mummy. And this is, you know, very much sort of the thing which he has been, you know, working on full time while, you know, co-creating, you know, Discovery and sort of managing it from afar, I guess. What do you, and I mean, sure, we've seen, you know, Kurtzman's take on Star Trek with 09 and Into Darkness, but, you know, what do you see here as far as how it may translate to Discovery or anything like that? I mean, I don't know if there is anything necessarily, but yeah.
Nothing kind of seems to jump out. That I think he's one of those people that perhaps needs his work to be, that perhaps he isn't, the worry you were saying that he's done all this work on Star Trek, Transformers, a lot of that kind of, as a writer, his work has to go through various different filters, and then it comes out the end. And when I think of, say, 09 Into Darkness, I think of them more as J.J. Abrams productions, whereas with this movie, I think this is kind of, he's the head honcho, and that he, I I'm not too sure how the whole script kind of worked out. Like, when I saw, like, Macquarie's name at the end, for example, and I thought, oh, he clearly must have been brought on late on by Tom Cruise to give it a polish. Like, I can't imagine Macquarie there at the genesis of that script, or even the first, second, or third draft. I can imagine him coming in and doing a bit of a rewrite here and there or something. Like, so I don't see... I think that's probably the best thing for Kurtzman is that his kind of flaws or talents as a creative writer has been well documented among Star Trek fans, and I think perhaps his work is best done when there's a strong director, an experienced director like a J.J. Abrams or, you know, a Michael Bay, whoever, that can go, okay, this is your script here, but this is perhaps how we can make it bigger. Like, you know, just because someone's a good writer doesn't automatically mean they're suitable to physically visualize that with cameras and the use of budget. So I think if he's part of a creative team surrounded by people like Nick Meyer and Brian Fuller, then I think his work will benefit more for having those people pass over it, as opposed to him being the guy who's the vision go completely through personally.
It's interesting because, I mean, I know that he's always got a million projects which he's working on in some, you know, regard or another, but it's like now that The Mummy is over with, which was obviously, you know, his priority, seeing as how it was a major motion picture and his first one at that. Like, I wonder if now he might sort of, like, shift some more attention back to Discovery and maybe, you know, give a little input into, you know, the whatever is left to write in season one and maybe in the post-production process. Maybe even coming on to direct an episode, you know, later in the season. I mean,
and I think TV would be a good place for him to kind of refine his talents. That, yeah, he's not going to have this big budget, and, you know, Star Trek historically, you've got to make a lot of, you know, good use of limited resources, whether that's on the film or in the TV screen. And I think that would be a good place, like that classic Star Trek directing school, for him to perhaps go to and graduate from. And there's nothing to say that he can't go on and do another big blockbuster movie in a few years' time, but perhaps he needs to scale back and kind of have some of those resources taken away to kind of refine those talents. And I think he could go on to, you know, be a good director if he can kind of complement his kind of big and bold writing style with visuals and kind of engaging, you know, talents like that, I think.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, he's working with all the right people, I think. You know, like his crew is very solid. Like we were talking about, Paul Hirsch, you know, editing the movie, and, you know, Ben Saracen was his cinematographer, who has photographed a number of really cool movies like Pain and Gain and stuff like that. So, you know, I'm sure that The Mummy was a very big learning experience for him, and it'll be interesting to see what he does next. Maybe he'll revert to something smaller, you know, something more in keeping with people like us, or maybe he'll, you know, pull a Stuart Baird and say, you know what, directing's not for me. I'm going to stick to these other things, which I've, you know, proven myself to be very talented at, or something. Who knows? It's interesting. And, I mean, I do not think that The Mummy is a disaster. You know, it's not like I watch this thing and I'm like, Alex Kurtzman's the worst director of all time. I hope he, you know, is buried alive like The Mummy. You know, I mean, that's definitely not what I think about this movie. I just think that it was disappointing, and it was, you know, a little less than good.
Yeah, for me, it was just, I just found it, like, I never came out of it angry or annoyed or anything like that. I just came out and went, God, that was boring. And that's something I'd never think I would come out of a Tom Cruise movie thinking. So that was just kind of, you know, I don't come out and think, oh, that was like, what a waste of an afternoon. It was kind of like, oh, I've seen that. And you feel you can then engage in the larger conversation that's going on with The Mummy just now and what it says about Hollywood, blah, 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 all those kind of think pieces that movies like this generate 10 a penny during the summer. So yeah, like, it was kind of worth it for that. And I, you know, it kind of probably hurt it a bit that I saw it as a double bill with My Cousin Rachel, starring Rachel Weisz, which, you know, seeing that so soon after watching The Mummy made me think, man, I miss the old days of the Brendan Fraser Mummy movies and The Scorpion King. bring those colourful, enjoyable movies back. And so that maybe worked against the movie as well. But yeah, that was my kind of main feeling. You know, not the worst ever, but just a... It probably is roughly what I expected it to be based on the trailers.
Yeah, that's, you know, I've heard a lot of people saying like, oh man, you know, it's not the Brendan Fraser Mummy, you know, whatever. That was like, I mean, the first time I saw the trailer, I'm like, good, you know, like I am glad that this is not the Brendan Fraser Mummy, because those movies do not hold up at all. I mean, the Scorpion King is pure garbage. Scorpion King 2 is pure garbage.
I've not seen the Scorpion King movies. I should add that. And I can imagine maybe they should have done like a modern reboot, and they could have had like, who's a popular wrestler these days? Like Hulk Hogan or John Cena. They could have had John Cena's head badly photoshopped onto the scorpion body that's running around a building. And, you know, that would have been I suppose based on his appearances in Trainwrecked and what's it called? Sisters, that I'd probably pay to see John Cena as a Scorpion King.
Well, he's in, did you see that movie, The Wall, the new Doug Liman movie?
No, it's, I don't think it's out yet here.
Oh, well, check that out when you see it. He's in that. He's pretty good, you know, so, yeah. I don't know. I mean, have you seen the original Mummy, the 1938 one?
Probably a long, long time ago. Usually when these kind of movies, like when The Mummy came out back in like the late 90s, early 2000s, it would be the sort of thing that would be a good excuse to kind of dust off the archives at like the BBC, and they would show like a weekend of catch the Universal horror movies before you see The Mummy. So
yeah,
it's been a long time since I've seen it, so I can't really comment.
Yeah, I did just watch it for the first time before seeing the new one, and it was interesting. It was cool, you know. I mean, I wouldn't say that it's a great movie at all, but they do a lot of interesting things. It was directed by that guy Carl Freund, I think is how you pronounce it. He was the cinematographer on Metropolis and stuff. So I mean, it looks amazing, you know. But it's an interesting thing, and it's interesting to see because it is a very small movie with like very, you know, sort of like little things happening, and you know, it's almost like a bottle, you know, movie, and it's like an hour and 15 minutes long, taking place in like small isolated areas with very little, you know, sort of action or anything like that. And to see them sort of like take that idea and expand it into this is really interesting. And it doesn't really work, but that's okay, you know. I guess they get an A for effort. So it's been fun talking about The Mummy today, but that's not all we're talking about here on Trek FM this week. So here's a look at what you may have missed elsewhere on the network.
Previously on Trek.fm, The Ready Room.
I bet the transporters were invented by Amazon as a way of delivering products to people.
I was totally going to say, it's like Amazon groceries would be like, yeah, I don't have to be there, but it can come like beam to my port. It's like, order, there it arrived, right there. You know,
that's like, right. Like, you've got a little Amazon dot next to the toilet, you just tap it, and then toilet paper materializes right there.
Standard orbit.
Every fan takes what they want, what works for them, what complements a story, a series, a show, a movie, and that can be in their heart, in their mind, canon, as in like, well, you know, I love it. It makes me feel good about those characters, the story, so I believe it. Or if you don't, for one reason or another, do you say, well, for me, I'm just going to pretend that didn't happen, or it doesn't connect to the part of the universe that I like.
To the journey!
Wait, you're saying it's like matter and antimatter when they interact? They
it's like costume or non-costume.
So costumes and non-costumes annihilate each other.
Yes.
In Voyager.
Exactly. That is how the universe is going to ultimately be destroyed, due to the interaction of naked people and people wearing clothes.
And that's what else is happening on Trek.fm.
check out all these shows and join the conversation about your favorite corner of the Star Trek universe and beyond. You'll find us wherever you get your podcasts. If you're an Apple user, be sure to hit the subscribe button in Apple Podcasts on iPhone, iPad, or Apple TV. And please leave us a star rating and a review in iTunes. If you're not an Apple user, we've got you covered as well. You can find us on Google Play, Stitcher, TuneIn, Spreaker, SoundCloud, Windows Phone, or you can just go to our website and download the MP3 or get the RSS link as well. We'd love to hear your thoughts on today's show, and there's a lot of ways that you can get in touch with us. The best place is probably by going to the Babel Conference. That's on Facebook. It's our listeners group. Just type Babel, that's B-A-B-E-L, into the search field on Facebook, and we should come right up. If you'd like to send us an email, you can go to our website, trek.fm/contact, and fill out the form and just choose Stage 9 as the show, and it'll come right to us. You can find us on Twitter at Trek.fm, or you can find us on Facebook at facebook.com/trek.fm. So, Lee, where can people find you on the internet and on the network?
Yeah, you can find me being full of mercury on Twitter at Lee_Nostromo. You can find me on the Earl Grey podcast talking about the Next Generation, and you can find me on the Filibuster podcast on the Nerd Party Network.
You can find me on Twitter at Mumbles3K, and you can also find me on the Nerd Party Network, and you can find me on TalkFilmSociety.com doing Soderbergh 2828, and you can find me on CommentaryTrackStars.com doing Commentary Track Stars. We'd like to thank our associate producers today, Chris Steftenagel and Jeff Sutter. Thank you very much, guys. If you'd like to be like Chris and Jeff and help us out, you can head on over to patreon.com/trekfm. That's patreon.com/trekfm. And you can get all the details on becoming a patron of the network. Perks include early access to episodes, exclusive content, producer credits, and more. So head on over to patreon.com/trekfm and check it out. All right. Well, that's it for The Mummy. Next week, we are taking a break. We're taking a week off, and we will be back the following week. John is still on shore leave, but I will be back with someone else to discuss something else. I'm not going to say what, just in case it doesn't happen. But check us out in a couple weeks.